This is the Education Gadfly Show.
So, Sarah, any comments on this? Any thoughts on math today?
On math? It's good.
Excellent. Way to add it all up.
Now, here's your host, Mike Petrilli.
Hello, this is your host, Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, here at the Education Gadfly Show and online at edexcellence.net. And now please join me in welcoming my guest co-host, the Belle of Bellwether Education Partners, Sarah Mead.
Thanks, Mike, for that greeting, and thanks for having me here on the Gadfly Show.
Oh, Sarah, such a straight response from you. Come on.
Sorry. I'm trying to live up to the standards of requests, but I can't quite match the belligerence or the volume.
Yes, that's true. And plus, you're dressed pretty nicely today, and your knees are not showing. And if Rick were here, even though it's cold and snowy, those things would be the case.
So, yeah, he probably would actually be wearing sandals despite the fact that it's snowy outside.
He would. Yeah. That's right. So,
Probably is wearing sandals right now in Hawaii.
In Hawaii.
Yes.
You can bet on that. Yeah. Yes.
Anyway.
So we were just reminiscing. This is your third time on the show.
It is. Yeah.
And we were thinking the first time that you came on the show, I think we got a lot of angry response from our listeners who thought that let's be honest, Rick was treating you poorly, without respect.
Well, I've known Rick a long time, so none of that surprised me. And that was actually a great, fun experience. Yes, so, right. Yeah.
That was back in the days when you hated boys.
Yes.
And you said there was no boy crisis. Yeah. But now we not only know that there's a boy crisis in this country, we know there's a boy crisis throughout the world, Sarah.
It is true. There are gaps in gender achievement throughout the developed world.
Yes.
Yep.
So that's an issue we might discuss sometime.
Yeah. No, I would love to come back and discuss that sometime. But I think we have a separate set of questions that I was told we were going to address today.
Oh, what? This is your show now, Sarah? Huh? You're going to just run it? Look at that. At least Rick always sits there. He does as I'm told. Just kidding. You are right. It is time for us to play Pardon the Gadfly. And then we've got our research minute. We've got our what's up with that. So let's get started. Daniela, please tell us. Let's pardon the gadfly.
Question number one. Michelle Rhee and her Students First organization announced their legislative agenda this week. So break it down for me. What's the good, the bad, and the ugly?
Look, I actually thought it came out pretty nicely. She focuses big time on teacher quality issues, on some school choice issues, and on sort of doing more with less. I think those are more or less the right themes to hit. My one tweak that I'd have or critique would just be that there's certainly a big push on performance pay in there, not surprisingly, based on where Michelle came from in D.C. But, let's acknowledge there is no money. I mean, this is, the big story for the next couple of years is all about budget cuts. And it's hard to imagine anywhere where they're going to have the money to do a serious performance pay deal like she was able to do in Washington, D.C.
I mean, I would quibble with that a little because I would argue that the sort of pressure of the budget cuts actually creates a need to rethink how we pay teachers at a more fundamental level that could, if people had political will, create opportunities to do that. I guess more broadly in terms of the policy agenda, I have a similar response to you. There's a lot of good stuff in there, but I don't think anybody was expecting to be surprised by the policy agenda, and I don't think anybody is. And ultimately, what their policy agenda is in detail is less important than what their strategy is for this broader sort of organizing piece and how do they really energize people to move things, since the argument is they're going to provide political cover for folks to make a difference at that level. And so we've heard a lot fewer details about that. And that, I think, is where the real challenge comes in. Are they going to do grassroots advocacy? How are they going to tap the grass tops and so forth?
So what's your take on this? I mean, it seems like behind Michelle's movement is an idea. And she said this, and you hear this from Davis Guggenheim and others, that, look, we know what works. We know what policies work. It's just a political problem of getting them enacted. I mean, do you think that's more or less true, that we know what the right policies are and we just can't move them because of politics?
Well, I think you can conflate two things there, right? One is sort of what do we know that are clearly the policy barriers to letting good stuff flourish, which is, I think definitely know there are certain policies that are barriers and that we should change to allow people to do more experimentation around good stuff, to allow local level reformers to flourish. I think what Guggenheim has sometimes been interpreted as saying is that because of the success of KIPP, we know what works. And I think that's a little more challenging of a statement. I think, I think we would be in agreement that we actually do need a lot more room for innovation and different types of models to be out there.
See, I just think we need to be very humble in the reform world and say, look, even with all of the reformy ideas that are out there, if you put them together and we could enact them somewhere, what do we think the impact would be? Sure, I would argue that we could raise achievement, we could narrow gaps. We're not going to close the achievement gap. And I think you're going to still see, high poverty schools way behind other schools, and you're still going to see most poor kids way behind affluent kids. And I think we should be honest about that. Okay. Topic number two, Daniela.
Okay, question number two. When PISA results are broken down by race, white American students score on par with students in most homogeneously white countries. And Asian students score just as well as students in Asian countries. Does this mean that American schools are in fact doing just fine?
Sarah?
So, I mean, this is kind of a meme that's been going around a lot in sort of like the conservative and nativist blogosphere, I feel like. And I'm actually surprised that people are willing to sort of tread as close to racism as some of the things I've read on this say. I mean, ultimately, it seems to me like a moot point. We live in a country where 17% of our kids are African American, 22% of our kids are Hispanic, 1 in 5 kids is poor, and 40% of our kids come from low-income families. As long as we're willing to say our education system is good except for those kids, mm-hmm. that's just an unacceptable level of failure if we want to continue to thrive and flourish as a nation. We, you know, even if the other 60% did great, they could right. not make up for that.
Right. Now, this was an article by Robert Samuelson, who's, I think, generally seen as, you know, maybe right of center economist writing for the Washington Post, and his main argument was, look, if you look at that those results and you see how they break out by race and income, you say, look, it's not necessarily that we have an education problem, it's that, you know, that we've got the social inequality in this country, and that's what's driving these results. And again, how can we as reformers say that, yes, of course that's a big issue, and we know that these results are highly correlated with socioeconomic status and even race to some degree, and not be afraid to talk about that, instead of just saying, oh, you know, to even utter those words is to be accused of, you know, falling down the trap of making excuses for our schools.
Sure. I do think there is value in sort of recognizing the fact that kids need lots of other things, and that, you know, going back to the organizing point that I'm interested in earlier, I think it would be really powerful if education reformers could organize with other people who care about kids to do a broad range of good things for kids. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't absolve the fact that our schools need to be as efficient and as effective as possible. And if we just look at the differences in how, you know, African American kids are flourishing in different school districts in the country, even yeah. New York versus D.C., right. like, it's clear a lot of places are not doing as well as they could.
Okay, topic number three.
Okay. What role does the culture of parenting play in students' success? And are the Chinese onto something with their strict approach?
Well, Daniela, we didn't just come right out and say it. We're talking, of course, about the Wall Street Journal article over the weekend that's been getting a lot of attention. It was something, what is it called? Something like Chinese mothers do it better or something
yeah,
like that?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And from a woman who wrote, writing a book, a battle cry of the tiger mother.
Yep.
Sarah, you've been writing about this. What's your take? She says, look, you know, Chinese mothers, by the way, she describes, you know, generally Asians, you know, not all Asians, of course, but compared to Western mothers, not all West, but, you know, in these general stereotypes, that the Chinese mothers are willing to be strict and tough and force their kids to do things they don't want to do, but create, you know, but to foster excellence, and that the rest of us are just not willing to do that.
Well, I mean, I really want to talk today, Mike, about whether or not Rick Hess is the Amy Chua of the education policy world. You know, when this article came out, a lot of the feedback, and she even in the article calls herself mean. And, you know, Rick has talked about the virtues of being mean.
Yes.
You know, I actually think both these sort of conversations in education reform between like mean and nice and what she's talking about between mean and nice are kind of a flawed conversation. Like, if you actually look at the research on parenting, you see that kids do best when they have both, you know, a rigorous, you know, structure and parents who do set demands on them, but also are emotionally nurturing and warm. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think when we look at education or when we look at mm-hmm. some of these other issues, that there's room for sort of balance between being tough on people and also, like, how do you really support excellence? And
all right, so that's all fair. And by the way, on the Rick Hess point, I mean, Rick, you know, believes in being mean in policy, but he's actually quite nice to his staff. And whereas this woman sounds like she's actually pretty mean to
yes,
her
no,
kids.
No, absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
All right, so just the distinction. We'll have to see what kind of parent Rick makes someday, though I'm sure he'll be a big teddy bear. But I think the one thing that, you know, I mean, is the article's a little over the top, and she's talking about making her kids practice 3 hours on the piano and, you know, not letting them participate in the school play and all kinds of stuff that can get your blood boiling. But, you know, as a parent, you know, I will say that I don't go through my day thinking about my boys and thinking about, I want to prepare them. You know, my main goal is for them to be excellent in school and to be highly successful in life. I'll be honest, like, I want them to be happy. You know, and is that totally squishy? And
you do live in nuclear free Tacoma Park.
I do, and I'm wearing my People's Republic of Tacoma Park hat right now with my big red star. No, but it's true. I mean, I will fess up to it. Like, mostly, like, I just assume that they're going to do fine. They'll do fine in school. They'll find, you know, they'll find a job they like someday. You know, I'm not worried about that so much. Like, I just want them to be happy, you know, which is a broader thing. I want them to have good relationships. I want them to find interests, you know. And this idea that, you know, I want them to be the best in their class at any given thing, I don't know. It just doesn't resonate with me. And if that means that, you know, the Chinese are going to pass us by because they, you know, want to be the excellent, I don't know. Maybe I'm just saying, hey, let's be like the Brits and the, you know, the rest of them in Europe and just, you know, enjoy life a little more.
What is interesting, because I think we give short shrift on our schools to social and emotional development of kids. You know, I mean, we talk a lot about academic rigor, but we know that children's social and emotional development is also very important and that parents care about it.
Yeah.
But we don't talk about it that much in education policy discussions.
Yeah. Well, and this is, look, this is why, you know, so much of what the reform crowd is pushing for is totally out of sync with what parents, at least let's say, you know, middle class, upper middle class educated parents want for their kids. And it's tricky. I mean, this is, I think this is, creates all kinds of schisms. It's how do we have a reform conversation, let's say, about what's good for poor kids without turning our public education system into a system that is just for poor kids, and that, you know, well-educated, more affluent parents feel like they look at the schools and say, God, there's just nothing there for me, and there's nothing there for, it doesn't speak to my hopes and dreams for my kids. Man, I sound like a big squish today, don't I?
You do a little bit. Yeah.
All right. So that's all the time we have for Pardon the Gadfly. We'll have plenty more time to banter and chat about some other big issues, Sarah, especially after we hear from Amber's Research Minute. So, Amber, I got the impression there when we were talking about the tiger mother that you were a little concerned about my squishy food.
Yeah, a little squishy because I just, like I said, you know, seeing Nico, you know, as a janitor, a trash man, I just don't think it's going to make you real happy.
All right. So, but he's going to do fine. And anyways, he really wants to be a fireman. And, and I think that that's attainable. And he could go be a fireman and then go back to college someday.
He could.
Got a great pension.
Yes.
Healthcare benefits.
This
all the rest.
Is true.
Unless people like us, you know, succeed in completely destroying public employee benefits.
There you go. Well, we're trying hard.
All right, Amber, what you got for us
all
today?
All right, this week we've got a new study out from the Brown Center at the Brookings Institution that asks, how well does NAEP match up with the Common Core standards in math? So a lot of interest in Common Core, given that all these states have signed on. So Tom Lovelace coded roughly 170 NAEP items in the number properties and algebra strands from the eighth grade test. Each was coded based on at which grade the Common Core standards recommend teaching the math that item assesses. The key finding is this. In terms of the grade levels mapped to the Common Core, the NAEP items assess math found at the second through eighth grade levels, but the average grade level for the number strand item is 5.2. So we got about half of the items covering material from the fifth grade or earlier, and the other half covering fifth grade or later. Still, more than 90% cover material below the eighth grade. The algebra items cover a mean grade level of 6.3. In short, the eighth grade NAEP item are on average 2 to 3 years behind the eighth grade math recommended by the Common Core standards. However, and this is my final point, and it's important, Common Core and NAEP define eighth grade tests differently. According to Lovelace, NAEP is cumulative, assessing math learned through eighth grade, so it makes sense that the average NAEP items are significantly below that grade, and Common Core appears to assess what is learned in the eighth grade, since its tests will be administered at each grade 3 through 8. So anyway, we've got two tests testing very different math. Lovelace ends up sort of at the end saying, you know what, when the Common Core test actually comes out, we need to be really careful in terms of discussing the differences and the similarities between these tests because there's going to be a lot of confusion. That's it.
Huh. Now, I love Tom Lovelace. I think he may have been our first guest ever on the Education Gadfly show.
Is that right?
He called in and we put a speakerphone up to a microphone. It did not work very well.
Wow.
It sounded like wah, 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 wah.
Funny.
But he's a little ahead of himself here, isn't he? I mean, we're talking about, you know, all we have right now are Common Core standards.
Yes.
And the tests themselves aren't coming out until 2014.
Yeah, but they do say at what grade level the standards should be assessed.
Right.
You know, and he gave about 6 or 8 or 10 items from the NAEP and said, okay, here's what this is measuring. Here's where the standard is covered in Common Core at this grade. And it's kind of spelled out. So
I'm just saying 3 years from now, people are going to have to remember, oh, wait, remember that study, you know, about that thing? We have to be careful how we interpret these results.
Yeah.
By the way, was this the Brown Center 2011 report?
Boy, I know he's... Hey, but you noticed he's getting it out earlier because he's waiting. I think he's responding to some of the criticism about
this
coming out
late. It is the 2010 report, but it's coming out in January, so that's not as bad.
Yes, not bad.
As past years.
He's got two more parts forthcoming, I do believe.
Very good.
So yeah, I think he's just, you know, kind of getting on the radar screen because there's all these questions, oh, what's the role of NAEP going to be when the Common Core assessments are around? And, you know, I think he's just kind of getting on people's radar screens and he lays out, you know, NAEP is a random sample across the nation and Common Core is going to be every grade individual scores. So, you know, just kind of doing a little bit of, you know, getting the information out there ahead of time.
All right. So, Sarah, any comments on this? Any thoughts on math today?
On math? It's good.
Excellent.
Very good.
Way to add it all up, Sarah. Okay, what's the song today?
So the song, since, and now listen, I want some props for this. Since we're talking about the same types of test, this was tough, but we have Kermit of the Muppet fame singing about looking the same as the green grass. It's so sad, and it's not easy being green.
It's not that easy being green. Having to spend each day the color of the leaves, when I think it could be nicer being red or yellow or gold or something much more colorful like that.
You know, I like Kermit the Frog as much as anybody else, but it's not easy being green. That was a little bit of a stretch there. Again, Amber, we're going to need to keep... The problem is we've been doing this now for a while, and so if we don't want to reuse songs, you know, it's more challenging. So... People out there, if you have ideas, you should send them to Amber. Anything education related. And particularly, you know what, if you want to pitch your own study to be covered on the Research Minute, you will have a better chance of being picked up if you recommend a song to go with it. Dan Goldhaber, I'm talking to you. Okay, it is now time for Chris's favorite, What's Up With That?
Woke up this morning and I got out of bed. Had a big old cup of coffee to clear my head. Telephone rang and you wanna chat? Well, sit on down and tell me what's up with that. What up with that? Yes,
sir. Chris, welcome back to the show.
Mike, how's it going?
I'm doing well. Excited. What do you have for us today?
Well, the latest comes to us from Murrah High School in Jackson, Mississippi, where school officials are denying any wrongdoing in the alleged whipping of three basketball players by Coach Marion Dorsey. Accusations arose in late October that Dorsey was whipping some of his players with a weightlifting belt. He later admitted to whipping the students for failing to correctly run plays, going as far as claiming he did so, quote, to save these young men from the destruction of self and what society has accepted and become silent to, the issues our students are facing on a daily basis, end quote. While Dorsey was suspended without pay for a determined period, he remains employed by the Jackson Public School District. Regardless of the numerous parents that allegedly told the principal about the whippings, no action was taken prior to the lawsuit being filed. The lesson learned here? Well, when you can't sneak or lie your way out of a problem, just deny it. At least that's what school attorney Joanne Shepherd would say. According to Shepherd, quote, those things that the school district was able to admit were admitted. Those allegations that needed to be denied, we denied them. Yes, that's an actual quote. So instead of taking responsibility for what happened on their watch, school officials deny any wrongdoing in allowing these whippings to take place and hang Coach Dorsey out to dry. Don't worry about Dorsey, though. In the end, it will all work out. He'll serve a couple weeks suspension without pay for his crimes, but will retain employment with the school district. Don't you love how familiar school districts are with the ways they can manipulate the legal system? I know I do. Let's get something straight, Coach Dorsey and Jackson Public. These players are student athletes, yet they're being treated like slave laborers. What's up with that?
Whew, Chris, bringing the big issues. I feel like you're like, what was the guy in Law and Order? What was the actor's name? You know, who always kind of summed things up at the end about, you know, the moral problems in our society. This is Chris.
Sam Waterston.
Yes. Before he went on to sell banking.
Yeah. TD Waterhouse or whatever it is.
Exactly. This is Chris Irvine. He is trying to bring a sense of morality and right and wrong to our schools.
Well, I'm just wondering if Coach Dorsey has been reading Amy Chua's article in the Wall Street Journal.
Yeah, I think I was thinking, wow, if he found out about my parenting techniques, all, you know, warm and fuzzy, he would definitely try to be taking that whip to my sons. I would not be happy about that at all. All right. Well, Sarah, it's been a pleasure having you here on the show today.
It's been a pleasure hanging out with you today, Mike.
Yeah. You know, it'd be fun to have you back sometime when Rick is here.
Yeah, no, that would be fun. Yeah.
Any words for Rick that you want to send to him?
I just hope Rick is enjoying his fruity drink on the beach in Hawaii while the rest of us are very cold and dealing with snow here.
Nicely said. Yeah. All right. Well, until next time, who are you, Sarah?
I'm Sarah Mead.
And I'm Mike Petrilli of the Education Gadfly Show. Don't forget, you can find us online at edexcellence.net, and you can also sign up for the Education Gadfly email newsletter there, too. Signing off.
The Education Gadfly Show is a production of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, located in Washington, D.C. For more information, visit us online at edexcellence.net.